So today, folks, we are up to our third segment where we're learning about the topic of Judaism, a value system or a legal system. And today we're going to be talking about a case study of animal treatment. Another way some people like to phrase this is animal rights. I'm not sure that's the direction we're going to go. We're going to talk about it from the perspective of humans, animal treatment. It starts off actually just one of my favorite jokes from many, many years ago. It's about a fellow who walks into the pet store one day and he sees that the parrots are for sale. And you know how parrots are. Parrots are very expensive. He's looking at them. It's $1,500, $2,000 for these parrots. And there's one marked down at $75. So he says to the owner, what could be wrong? What's the issue with this one? And so he says, well, it has a little bit of a language problem. It came from a little bit of a battered household. So he says, well, how bad could it be? Right, you know, $75, it's like going out for dinner. So he buys the parrot. And really, it's a beautiful bird. It's a beautiful bird he has in the house. And it doesn't seem to be too much of an issue. But after the first week or two, it starts opening up its beak. And all kinds of filthy words start falling out. And he knows how to educate. So he starts training it. And he starts putting it on the other side of the house. And he works with training and taking away its food and trying to regulate it. But it doesn't seem to work, and the more he works with it, the more foul the language becomes, and the more embarrassing it is. And after one particularly embarrassing episode with his boss over and his wife for dinner, and all kinds of profanities streaming forth from the other side of the house, he decides that's it, and he takes the bird and he puts it in the freezer, and he said, I'm going to show it a lesson, give that bird a lesson. And the screaming is incredible from behind the other side of the door. And after a while, it quietens down in silence. And he says, I really, maybe I went too far. Maybe that was a little extreme. He runs over to the freezer and he opens up the door. And the parrot steps out. The parrot looks up at him and then looks down at the ground and says, my dear sir, I have to apologize. My behavior has been completely unbecoming over the last months, and I've embarrassed you and your family, and I truly apologize. You're going to see a new leaf. I'm going to turn over a new leaf, and I will be a new parrot from here on inwards. The man said, wow, that's quite something. He says, I just have one question. He said, what did the turkey do? Anyway, so when it comes down to this topic of animal treatment, we have to start at the beginning. We have to start at the beginning and try to appreciate this. You should know that it is estimated in the year 2019, 80 billion land animals were killed for human consumption, 72 billion of those being chickens, just in terms of the actual numbers. And so there's an incredible amount of animal consumption that's going on in the world today as we speak. On the other hand, if you Google real estate planning and animals, you will read a long history of many, many animals that are received. We're not talking about to sustain them on a budget for little, doggy bowls and for a year or two. We're talking about millions of dollars that animals were endowed with. And it's so interesting that there's so many different camps about how we relate to animals. And there are those who invest incredible amounts of money and care deeply and will even speak of their animals like their family, like an extension of their family. And then there are other people who don't really care what it takes or how much of waste is going into killing, eating, destroying, or cruelty to animals as well. And there seems to be very different camps when it comes to this. I was once in Albany on a mission related to with the OU's program for advocacy for school programs for private school tuition, and we bumped into the group. We were there, advocating for private school tuition, and we were there with the Stop the Racehorse group. There's all kinds of. So you meet all kinds of people, and there's very different groups, and people have very high passion or very dispassionate about this topic in general. And the question is, where does the Torah stand? And it's a very instructive topic for a simple reason, is that the Torah doesn't explicitly talk about this. So this moves into the zone of what's called the Ratzon HaTorah parasha, the idea of what the Torah wants from us, how we're supposed to intuit that, and then how do we regulate those ideas. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at a few clues in this topic. Then we're going to look at how that expresses itself and some of the limits that Halacha has created on a normative basis. And Judaism, like in most cases, is in the gray zone. It's not something where it's all or nothing. It's not broad strokes. It's Judaism has a more subtle approach to things as well. So let's start at the beginning. The Torah tells us two times what seems to be a similar mitzvah. In fact, one of them appears in the Parshas Mishpatim, which we just passed. It says, Kisira chamor sona acho rovetz tachas masalai, v'chadalta me'azov loy azov ta'azov imoy. If you see the donkey of your enemy, right? So how does a person have an enemy? Are we allowed to have enemies? Okay, but be it as it may, you're a person you really dislike. So I give an example. Actually, we're reading at the Shabbos table. So this is not to do with animals, but it's a similar kind of concept. A taxi is called. This is before the Uber days. A taxi is called to a particular crossroads to pick up a passenger. It's a long trip. He's going to earn a lot of money on this trip. And as he's about to get there, another taxi pulls up and says, "Oh, did you call? It would remind me where we're going, but then I'm happy to take you," and picks up his fare. You know, and then drives off, and he's so mad, and he's driving off, and he carries on driving, and five blocks down, he sees this guy broke down, and he's flagging down people to try to, he needs help. Should he help him or not, right? So you could classify that as sona'acha, somebody who's just taken, do you help other people? But yeah, it's more complicated, because it's not just his taxi, it's his donkey. And the Torah says, azov ta'azov imoy, help him. Similarly, we see later on in Dvarim, in Kiseitze, V'loy sireh es chamor achicha o esharon aflim baderech, V'salam to mehem hakem tokim imoy. This is the donkey of your friend, and you cannot hide yourself, you cannot avert your eyes from them, you need to help with them. Now, what does that mean precisely? So it's seen to be understood that the one over here is a mitzvah of what's called prika, another one is called te'ina. So these are two separate commandments. Prika literally means, lifrok is?
To unload
the animal. And the other one is lit'on, which is? Load. To reload, right? So there's two separate mitzvahs over here. Which is which? The language itself isn't so obvious in the psukim, but the tradition we have is, anyone want to take a guess? Which one is the unloading? Which one is the loading?
First one's unloading.
What would give it a clue to us that there needs to be unloading in the first one as opposed to the second one? So it's tachas ma'as ravetz tachas ma'as. It seems to be crouching, which means the beast seems to be in distress of sorts, right? It's not managing this. So the helping there is to help unload the beast. And in fact, the Gemara explains that all the opinions, the Bava Mitzvah Daf Lamed Beis and Beis, tells us that all the opinions in this topic all believe the same concept. What's the same concept? That there is more of a requirement to help when it comes to perika, to unloading, than when it comes to reloading. I'll give examples in halacha. Number one is, well, just you can see in the language of the pasuk. The pasuk demands us to go even further for our enemy for perika, meaning to say the requirement of unloading is so strong it'll even be in the situation of an enemy. That's an interesting example. But more than that is, let's say, even though it says imoy with them, with that person, what happens if the owner says, "Hey, I know you've got a mitzvah to unload my animal, and I'm going to sit over here smoking my cigar while you do your mitzvah," right? So do you have a requirement? So the answer is, in the case of unloading, yes. In the case of reloading, not so fast. You don't have to volunteer. You can now charge him for your time. You can say, "Yeah, well, actually, but my hourly rate happens to be when I get to my office is $452 an hour. So we're going to prorate that, and we'll see how fast I get this done, and you can take it from there." The Gemara makes an assumption that everybody agrees that perik, or unloading, is more consequential, we'll call morally consequential, and therefore halachically consequential, than te'ina. And why is that? The Gemara says, because tsar ba'alei chayim da'oraisa, because the factor which is over here, which is additional, is the pain of that animal. The pain of the animal, which is why there's more of a requirement when it comes to unloading. There could be another reason as well, by the way. What's another reason that you might be able to argue that unloading is better? Good financial loss, right? So you could just look at it, which means then you're essentially quantifying the animal as an asset rather than a being, right? If you look at it from that perspective. And the Gemara does entertain that. But just to be aware of it, there are multiple ways of examining or considering this situation. Okay, folks? That's example number one. We're actually going to follow, just in the first part of here, some of the ideas that are mentioned in Rav Asher Weiss's Sefer, called Minchas Asher, in Devarim Siman Nun Aleph, in Kiseitza. He tracks this and he makes a few suggestions. We're going to take it from there and go beyond. So let's look at a few other examples. So in Source 3, Rashi says, and this is quoting Rashi in the Gemara, in which he says this point as well. We're going to move into the next one, which is the Me'iri in Bava Metzia also says, Rav Menachem Me'iri in Source 4 says, "Mimashir ra'inu b'mishnaseinu, Shech Mira Torah beprika Yosef Merit Mibetina. So the fact that the Torah is more concerned about unloading than off than loading up. Lomadnu al tzar barichaim she'onu muzarim alav min haTorah b'chol makom. We have to be careful about the treatment of animals. V'aval bishep shuto shel mikra lo yirainu bein boy chiluk bein perikah letzina. If you read the pesukim, it's not so clear that the one is more weighted than the other in the actual pesukim themselves. V'akos haTorah beferush lo yisach som shor b'dishoy. You're not allowed to muzzle your ox while it is while it's plowing. While it's threshing. Okay, threshing is where it's pulling a person on a board over the seeds to grind, not grind them, but to separate them from the chaff. That's the pre-winnowing stage. And you're not allowed to muzzle it. Why would it be in your interest as a farmer to muzzle it? Because it's going to start eating, right? But on the other hand, it's a hungry cow. It's a hungry ox. So we're not allowed to do that. And the Meiri says, you see from here, that even without the Perikah and Te'inah and the weighting of those two mitzvahs, clearly the Torah cares about the ox. In fact, if you want to go one step further, it's interesting to note something fascinating. And that is that when it comes to this mitzvah, there is a parallel mitzvah when it comes to human beings, which is, what are we saying essentially here? A beast of burden, while it's on the job, you're not allowed to withhold food. Can we think of another mitzvah that relates precisely to that? So let's say a person's a worker in another person's field. They are allowed to eat from the trees. They're not allowed to store. You know, I've got a backpack, you know, a hiking backpack. No, that's not allowed. But you're allowed to take the grapes. You're allowed to take the fruit and eat while on the job. And it's interesting that the Torah mandates the same thing for one's animal at the same time. An animal and a worker have the same in the category in the terms of sensitivity the Torah provides towards them. Similarly, we see this example in the idea of feeding animals as well. When it comes to feeding animals, there is a halacha, and the Gemara in Brachos describes this, that one has to feed one's animals before one eats. In fact, so much of the Gemara describes, if there's a discrepancy, let's say that I have not yet eaten, and I've washed, and I need to make an interruption in Brachos, would calling somebody or reminding somebody to fill the bowl for my dog be an interruption? The Gemara says no, because you're not really allowed to eat until your animals have eaten. That's how far it goes. And the She'elas Yavetz Rav Yaakov Emden, when commenting on this, I just put a little arrow in source 5 where he says, "Lachen itila Torah chova al ha'adam shehen sheloi lefarnes koidem shiyochal hu atzmo liknos midas rachmanos benavsho." Why would the Torah do this? Where do we get this from? So the Torah wants us to be merciful people. The Torah wants us to be caring people. Similarly, in the Sefer Charedim, it's so interesting, this Sefer is broken up into mitzvahs which are dependent on different parts of the body. And so in this chapter, which is chapter, I think, 14, Perek Yudalet, this is about what he calls mitzvahs hataluyas bagaron, the mitzvahs which are dependent on the throat. Is that interesting? So he talks about all the eating-related mitzvahs. And the first thing he says is he describes the importance of eating. And then he says in the second paragraph on top of page 3, "Umasaya bedarenu sharav mukhamukubal gadol mar Yitzhak Ashkenazi shinistakel bifnei talmid chacham echad." So this person Rav Yitzhak Ashkenazi looked in the face of a person who was a learned person. "Vamaloi nirsham befonecha avon tzar baleichaim." I see that there's in your face. I sort of see there's something wrong, and I see that your treatment of animals has an indiscretion in it. What does that mean? He said, "Wait a second. Is there anything I'm doing which is not correct? Have I put any parrots in the freezer recently? Like, what am I doing?" Right. So he says, his wife would not feed their chickens in the morning. She just let them forage, you know, let them find their things. And he said to her, "No, it's appropriate that we should feed our livestock." The next time you appear in front of the road, the rabbi said, it seems it's cleared. And afterwards, a post facto, he told him about this. And therefore, he says, why is this? Where do you get this from? This is an expression of walking in the ways of Hashem. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about these things. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is racham. God cares about all His creations. As an example, notice these are all, we're called prescriptive hints, where the Torah tells us one thing, and there's a mitzvah, And what we're seeing coming out of that, exuding from that, is a sensitivity, whether it's the way that we unload, whether it's the way we don't muzzle, whether it's the way that we walk in his ways. However, for just a second, just one more example of this, is another example of this is where it says, Lo yisach rosh b'shor v'chamor yachtov. There's a prohibition about harnessing to your plow share. Again, everybody doesn't know about plows anymore these days. It's like really good to go visit, Amish town out in Pennsylvania just to sort of see how these things really work. And the plow essentially is the more primitive, older plows was a hook essentially, which would enable us to break through the ground in order to open it up, to churn the ground, to bring the soil underneath to the top and allow the seeds to go in. And so in order to do that, it's very hard to do that. They would harness it to an animal, two animals, when there could be a yoke. So let's say you're under the yoke, you put an ox and a donkey together. The Torah says you cannot do that. Why? Says the Ibn Ezra very simply. Just look at it. A donkey is a strong animal, so if he's to burden, but it ain't anything compared to an ox, pound for pound. That ox has got much more muscle on it. And therefore, the donkey is going to be at a loss. It's going to be the weaker partner trying to pull this plowshare, and it's not going to be doing a great job. So another example where this is seen as, in what we'll call the Jewish understanding of things from the Torah's prescriptions as a way of caring for animals as well. The most fascinating... Yes, Doctor.
I'm just going to ask you, is this based on the fact that there is an inherent right to the animal to its own kindness, or because God once been calling us good meadows?
Good, I'll come back to that in a second. So we haven't got any whys yet, but just looking at these, or we're just called prescriptive hints. Come back to that point, is the why a little deep in a moment. But right now, if you look at these things and you say to yourself, well, technically speaking, all I'm doing is I'm ensuring that my oxes and my donkeys are not on the same team. Well, I've done what the Torah check. I've done what the Torah says. You're ignoring what the Torah wants. What does the Torah want from us? Well, I'm giving you an example, says the Torah, of what it means. And therefore, the next time when it comes to how you feed your animals, when it comes to how you treat your animals, you're going to extrapolate from this and you're going to now treat your animals in a different way. That's what we're seeing from this, is understanding what the Torah is. I think the most fascinating of all of these is not a prescriptive one, but rather a descriptive one, where the Torah describes an action which seems to, that the Torah dislikes or looks down upon treating animals foully. And what's that example? Says the Rambam, fascinating, where in the Torah does it go out of its way to besmirch a person who ill-treats their animals? So it says, Babilam. It says, Lama hikisais asancha. The angel says, why were you beating your donkey? Right, he goes on to explain that it was not listening to me, and the whole thing like that. But what is the basic assumption of that angel is, what in the world are you doing? On what right do you have to be hitting your animal unnecessarily? Control your temper and learn how to work with your animal, right? And so the Rambam says, from this descriptively, it's not a prescription. The Torah is not telling us. The Torah is describing a conversation between an angel and Bilam, but this is what we'll call category two of the way that we learn this, which is what we discussed 2 weeks ago in conveying better principles. This is not a mitzvah. This is a narrative, and in the narrative emerges a value. And the value is don't be like this foul-tempered, self-centered, narcissistic individual, right? So we're going to try to be a little more like that as well. That's what Rambam says in Mor Nevuchim. And an interesting example the Gemara describes of this, which is, this is also descriptive of this, is the in Bava Metzia, Pei Hei Amud Aleph, and it's a terrifying story. It says, Al Yedei Maaseh Bo, it describes that Yura Nasi, the author of the Mishnah, or the redactor of the Mishnah, had suffering, and he contracted some sort of disease or illness, and it says that he got it through an action. What was that? Maihi. Hahu eglo dahavu komatu le l'shchita. So he was sitting one day, and there was a calf that was being taken to slaughter. It was slated to be turned into food. Azal ta'atalye l'reishe bekanfei. And so it came and it put its head in his lap, right? It was obviously kind of realizes, or perhaps it was just scared of all the noise and what was going on. But kind of went to Rabbi Yaakov Bachi and it started crying. Amar le zil lakach notzarta. So he says, go. Like, why are you nuzzling up to me? This is why you're created. You are created to become a hamburger, essentially, right? He says, Omri. Hoyo voloi kom Merachem leisu ole yisurin. Because he was not more sensitive to this calf, he contracted illness, God forbid. No aleinu. The Gemara says, v'yadei ma'aseh holchu. And it's through his actions that the disease left. Chad yuma have a kan amase de rebi beisa. So his maidservant was busy cleaning the house out. Have a shadya b'nei karkushta v'kol kansha luhu. So she was sweeping these weasels. I guess she found some rodent in the house. Wonderful. Amar la shavkinu. He says, leave them, or perhaps, I don't know if it means leave them in the house, or leave them to, don't kill them, because why? Omri, because he is willing to be merciful, we'll be merciful, so to speak, upon him as well. Again, this is not a mitzvah. The Torah, the Gemara is not prescribing something here. The Gemara is describing. Now, you may say, because Rebbe was extra important, Rebbe was so, was such a sensitive human being, so he was judged very finely, and that's true. But there is an aspirational element over here where we ourselves, in the way that we treat even the vermin, it seems like, is even the cow that's going to be slaughtered, there's an element of care that is required. This is a descriptive element to it. So we ask ourselves, and so before we get into the limits of this and the reasons for this, there's just a beautiful statement that the way that Rabbi Sachs describes it in an essay he has in Kisets on animal welfare. And listen to this quotation. He says, Judaism regards animals as sentient beings. They do not think or speak, but they do feel. They are capable of distress. There is such a thing as cruelty to animals. As far as possible, it should be avoided. Right. So the Torah does say, coming back to the point, is that the way that Rabbi Sachs interprets this is, the Torah understands that there is an instinctual feeling. Animals feel pain. And it's clear that animals feel pain. They may not be able to express it in the same ways as we do. You cannot put them on the same couch and hear them and what they're going through. But they do experience pain, and we are expected to withhold that. Whether that's pain of hunger, whether it's pain of treatment, whether that's pain of fear, as an example. These are all emotions that animals instinctually feel as well. Yes, Rosemary.
So that we shouldn't buy those mouse patches and the...
I don't know. There are different ways of getting rid of mice, but the glue traps are probably a very cruel way to kill them. It takes a very long time for them to die. The snap traps are a little faster when it comes to that as well. So there might be a little bit of a difference when it comes to that. We have to also consider if there's a concern for human safety as well, which is also part of the cheshbon, but let's get to that in just a moment. So what's the reason for this rule? So this comes back to a very, very fascinating observation. This is a very famous idea, but it's important to just review it quickly. The Torah gives us another example where we seem to care about the instinct of animals, and that is about mothers and children. There's a few instances where the Torah is careful or considerate about the feeling of a mother animal to a child animal. And one example is what's called Shiloach HaKein, where the mitzvah is that if you need the eggs or if you need the young, you need to send away the mother bird before taking them as well. Why is that? And the Rambam says precisely this, which is in source 13 in the Morin of Vuchim. The Rambam in the third section of Morin of Vuchim says, V'chein asar lishchot oisoy ve'es b'nabi yamechad. There's another mitzvah, which is, you're not allowed to shecht an animal and its child, its offspring, on the same day. That's a mitzvah in the Torah. Because the primary reason is that, God forbid, a mother animal should not see her young being slaughtered in front of her. There's a lot of pain the animal experiences. That instinctual feeling of a mother to a child is the same as is found in human beings, says the Rambam. Meaning, that is an inbuilt algorithm into motherhood. It is not an intellectual experience. That's after the instinctual ability to, so to speak, which is literally, it's a feeling or a sense of the child. And that's a letter specifically about animals which are domesticated, which we can eat. And they recognize their children. The Rambam goes on to say, also, and that's the reason for Shiloach HaKein as well, because how could you take the eggs away from a mother. I don't know if you, when I was young, I remember there was on the soccer field, the football field we used to go to, inevitably at one season there would always be birds that would put their nests somewhere. And you could know you could come that you're in that area because the mother bird would start screaming at you if you were within, you know, 20 feet of the nest. You know that somehow she just laid eggs. Right? They were just really, really, really protective, you know. Then most animals are not dangerous unless you get between them and their young, right? So if you're out in the wild and you see a rhinoceros, you want to just make sure that behind you is not its young. That's the worst thing, right? So you want to, if you see an elephant, you want to just make sure that you're not between the mother and the baby. It's just basic rules of engagement in the wild, because when it comes to the parent-child relationship, as the Rambam says, it is real, and we are not allowed to create that pain. Yes, Tibby.
It's interesting about you can't shech them both on the same day, but you can shech the young today and the mother tomorrow.
Good, okay, good. So one of the criticisms of the Rambam's observation over here, and I mean the limitations of the Rambam's intuition over here, is precisely that point. So the Ramban, Nachmanides, asks on the Rambam, and he says, really, the mitzvah should be benoiva oisai, meaning the problem is the young first and the mother. But technically, on the same day, you could kill the mother and then the baby, right? That if you wanted to sort of, if it's precisely about the Rambam's reasoning, that's one of the questions you could ask on the Rambam as well. It doesn't seem that the Rambam's ideology or his perspective in this mitzvah is encompassing enough. That's one of the many questions the Ramban asks on the Rambam.
But he says it's laharfi. So he doesn't,
yeah, you're right, you're right. So when it comes to regulation, you're right. So the Rambam would answer by saying is that the Torah is regulating. And when it comes to regulating the masses, it's too subtle as you talk about orders. You just say, don't do it. And everybody says, yes. And then everything, and then we work it out. That'll be the way the Rambam says, and that's how regulation works. Law does not work with subtlety. It doesn't say, oh, in specific, precise cases, that because people don't get that. They don't understand subtlety. So that would be the way Rambam says it. But Ramban asks that question. The Ramban says, the Rambam, in fact, is off his mark. This is not correct. And he quotes a number of proofs. And he says, ultimately, and to me, this is always just a beautiful, very powerful paragraph in Source 5. It's an extremely long essay that Rambam has in Parshas Kisaitse, but the part that's relevant to us is in the second paragraph where he says, Aval to'eles ba'adam atzmoi limnami meno nezek oy emuna ra'ah. When we do a mitzvah, it's not about the outcomes, it's rather about the process itself that is we're trying to eradicate within ourselves some sort of corrupt character or belief system. Midah meguna or liskor hanisim benifloos abore yisporach, or to re-educate ourselves about Hashem's interaction with this world. Lodas Hashem v'zehu letzareif bohem. That's what it means. The mitzvahs are, what's the tzareif? What's the exact word?
Purify.
To purify, to smelt. To smelt the human being. That's what the point of the mitzvah is. Sheyu kekesef tzoruf. That you should be like smelted silver. Ki atzoreif kesef ein ma'aseyu beloy tam. Aval hoitzimim nukol sig. When you smelt silver, how do you do it? You ratchet up the temperature to an extraordinary heat. You put the silver in it, and it's not refined. And at that extreme temperature, all the dross moves to the side, so it floats to the side. Then you pour out the pure silver. That's what Hashem is doing to us. And that's why we do it, not because of what we're trying to produce, not because we're saving any animals, but because we're becoming better people. And therefore he says, quotes this Tanchuma, which says, so the Midrash says, does it really matter how we kill an animal? Like we slaughter it, we put a hole through its throat, like why? Why specifically is this the prescribed method? That the mitzvahs were really not given for the outcome, but rather to smelt us, to become more sensitive. And shechita is more sensitive of a method of killing when it comes to this as well. The Ramban therefore says that the mitzvah shiloh hakein is not predominantly to save a mother from pain, but for us to be sensitive to a mother's pain, if that makes sense. Okay, so it's more about us, the process-oriented, than the outcome. Now, it may yield the same result, But in the end of the day, that's not the reason for it, says the Ramban. Fascinating and very important debate about this. And we just talked, we learned a little bit about this yesterday when it comes to the stocker paradigm. Is tzedakah, is charity, there to help create a welfare state? Or is it there to help us refine ourselves in becoming more refined and sensible people to the needs of others? And it may in fact be that, as the Rambam himself argues in that case, is it might actually be about us more than it is the outcome. And it yields perhaps a society of givers and kind people, but that's the byproduct of the self-work necessary as well. As an example here, I do want to just comment that there is a third and fascinating reason which is to be observed, which is the Zohar quotes on Shiloh HaKein, which is actually the Chavos Yair quotes this in Source 15. He says, "Hatam lektov haZohar shu kedei sha'u oif ima oif ois titztaer." It's to create pain. Meaning, what do you think the mother bird doesn't see what you're doing? Right? Like you chase away the mother bird. Where is she? She's on the branch of the tree above you as you're taking those eggs. So it's in order to create the pain of separation in the first place with the mother and the eggs. V'tifrach b'makom l'makom ulevakesh es boneha v'al yedekach yisgalgulu rachmeha makom baruchu al bonov shebegonos. By creating the pain of separation, of the mother bird knowing that something is awry, and you're sending her away to handle her nest, then our Kodesh Baruch Hu is, that pain is registered, and it's to reawaken the pain that the Almighty's Shechina feels because of the separation of her children, which is us, in Golus. And therefore, through that process, we are, there's an element of Rachme Shemaim, which leads to an interesting halakhic question, and that is, let's say you're walking along, and you see a mother bird on the nest, but guess what? You've had breakfast. You don't eat the eggs. These types of eggs, they're too small. You have no interest in the eggs. What should you do? Let's go through the reasons for right now. According to the Rambam, that it's in order to avoid the mother going through pain, then you should carry on walking. If it's because of your sensitivity to animals, then guess what? You should carry on walking, right? Because that's not, you're not creating any, you're not doing anybody a favor. You know, so you're not doing the mother bird a favor. So, but if the reason is about creating this rift between a mother and her children, Kabbalistically speaking, and it's in order to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu about the rift between the Shechina and her children, well, in that case, then there might be a reason to do that. So let's review that quickly again. According to the Ramban and the Rambam, whether it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about the feelings of animals, the instinctual feelings of animals, or whether it is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about us becoming better people, if we see a nest and we don't need the eggs, there would be the rational and necessary halachic response, according to them, would be not to take the eggs, not to send away the mother bird. And that's precisely what the Chasam Sofer says in his Shuvos, in Shuvos Chasam Sofer, Orach Chaim, Siman Kuf, the 100th response in the section of Orach Chaim. He says, clearly it is not a chiyuv. It's not a chiyuv in the same way. It's only if you need it. And that's relating, as he quotes the Ramban and the Rambam. However, if you see that the Chavos Ya'ir, as he quotes the Zohar, that there is actually a practical to'elis, there's a practical outcome of it being a Kabbalistic idea of separating the children from the mother to be ma'orer, to wake up the Shechina from its separation from its children to bring Geula, then there would be a positive reason. The Chasam Sofer quotes this Chavos Ya'ir, and he says, it is clearly not the case that this is what the Gemara says. This is clearly in the Torah's Hanistar. This comes from Kabbalistic ideas, and when we have a conflict between Kabbalistic and when we have and explicit aspects of the Torah, we go to the explicit, and the Chasam Sofer says one would not need to. However, you'll notice today that there's a large encouragement to do this, and that's because there's many segulos which are associated with. One is, as the Zohar is quoted in the Chavos Ya'ir is saying, which is the very well-known idea, but there are other ideas, the Arichos Yomim, based on the Pasuk, that this is a beautiful thing. There's other ideas which are associated with the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein, which is why if you read the first halacha in Yoredeh, when it describes Shiloh HaKein in Reish Tzadi Beis, where Aruch HaShulchan starts this, Rav Epstein describes that this is like the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. It's a thing you cannot hide yourself from because it is a mitzvah chiyuvis that you have to do this. Now, it's not because the Torah disregards, it's not that this is disregarding what the Ramban and the Rambam had said, but it means to say that there is an overarching value of, there's an overarching idea which is being achieved by doing it despite the fact that the animal's suffering, even though you don't need the eggs. But that seems to be the debate over here. Again, it gets into the very notion of what is the Ratzon HaTorah in this case, where it perhaps is less necessary for you to actually use the eggs themselves. Now, there are limits to this rule, so let's take a look at this. These are all ideas. We looked at essentially, generally, what we'll call prescriptive ideas of Ratzon HaTorah, what the Torah really wants from us. We looked at the descriptive ideas of what the Torah wants from us. We looked at the important debate as to whether it's a function of the outcome or the process, the Rambam and the Ramban. Now let's look at some limitations. So not in every case do these laws apply. So as an example, in Shulchan Aruch, the Torah, the halacha is what about when it comes to feeding animals on Shabbos? So feeding animals involves a significant amount of tircha and work, and there's always some sort of involvement that's required. So the halacha is you are and must feed your animals on Shabbos, but the emphasis being on the pronoun being your animals on Shabbos. So the Shulchan Aruch says in Source 16, Ein nois din maim uveloi mezonas lifnei devorim. You can't feed the bees on Shabbos, but only lifnei yonei shovach, and not before, let's say, the pigeons. Yonei aliyah, uveloi lifnei chazir, avol nois din lifnei avazim, v'tarnogolim, v'yonei baitus, v'chein lifnei kelev, shemezonasov alecha. You can't give it in front of your chickens, your domesticated pigeons, and in front of the dog that is dependent upon you. And the Mefarshim explain the halacha is that those that are domesticated and depend on you, you have a responsibility to. But those that are not dependent on you, wild animals, animals which are stray, and you've not already set up the dependency cycle of feeding that cat every day, but those that are really stray, you do not, because you're exerting effort for something which really is not upon your responsibility, and in a Shabbos setting, one should not be doing this, which actually raises an interesting issue which comes up around February time in the winter in America, which is Shabbos Shira, and all the kids come home with these little seed platters for the birds, and there's a minhag to feed the birds based on what happens in the parasha. But there are those who say in halacha, like, those birds are not upon you, those birds are not your responsibility, and if they're not your responsibility, then you do not have that idea. The same thing as well, we learned beforehand that you're supposed to feed animals before you eat. That means animals which need you. Right, those are the animals which need you. But that does not mean to say that I need to go out and make sure that every stray cat in this neighborhood has eaten before me. It means those within my sphere of responsibility and dependency, as an example. So there is a limit to this. But it is starving. Yeah, well, you know, it forages around and figures things out without you. So therefore, in this situation, the halachas of before you eat or the or feeding on Shabbos are not... not going to be sent there. There's also gradations of how much you can do. So, for instance, the Gemara talks about a case which is Paskin al-Aloch Azon, Source 19. The Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Chochesom Beis tells us, Om Rav Yehuda, Om Rav, Behema Shenofla La'amas Maim. Let's say that an animal falls into an aqueduct, a dike, right? So it falls into a pit and is obviously in distress. Maybe Kari Muxosos Maniach Tachter, Vim also. You're not allowed to move an animal in that sense. You're not allowed to actually physically move animals on Shabbos, but you can throw things in that it can climb out with. So you can enable it to go out as well. The Gemara says, Mesivei behem shenafla lamas mayim oisolai parnasa b'malkoyim abishosholai tamus. The Gemara then quotes a brisa which says that you are allowed to throw food down into the pit that it finds itself in, and that's sufficient. The Gemara says, parnasa in, that would indicate that you're allowed to feed it, but you're not allowed to throw your pillows and your sheets into to create a stepping stone. By the way, what's at stake? What's the cost? What? It sounds like it's a general animal over here because the animal's in distress. This is not about feeding. This is an animal that's in distress. So now, if it comes out to us, what would the concern be about throwing in karim uksasos, throwing in these pillows and these things? Like, what's the problem with that? Like, you know. So the Gemara actually talks about this, what's called mevatel kli me'echano. It's an element where you're taking away the usages. Once it's used, you're taking away a usage. You're limiting the usage of that kli on Shabbos, but it's called batel kli me'echano. So as an example, a more typical case would be, is let's say I have a candle that's dripping wax. I'm not allowed to put my cup underneath it because I'm no longer, once the wax falls into it, I can't move that cup. So I've made it muktzah on Shabbos. I no longer can use it for tea. I can't use it for other things on Shabbos. So I've limited its usages. That's called batel kli me'echano, which is a more irregular halacha. It's very unique circumstances, but it would still apply itself, yeah? So the Gemara says, but that's what you're doing. So are you allowed to feed it, or are you allowed to go beyond that and allow it to get out? So the Gemara says, lo'kasha, ha'de efsha b'panasa, ha'de i'efsha b'panasa. Meaning, if the animal's in distress, the calf is lowing, the dog is barking, the cat is meowing, and it's stuck in this pit. If it's sufficient to throw it food, and that will give it a long enough term to be able to survive in the pit, then that's sufficient. That's what you should do, right? You shouldn't go to the mevatel kli me'echano. But if it's in a situation where that's not going to be enough, the animal's going berserk because it's in so much distress, then you should absolutely overrule this particular element of mukta in order to save it as well. Which means that is tzar balei chaim a ticket to do anything? The answer is no. There's gradations depending on the level of distress. In the case where you're throwing it food, you may have not resolved the issue. It's still in discomfort, but it's not in distress, as an example. So when you have a question about tzar balei chaim, you have to ask yourselves, is what's at stake? Like, what's the cost of what I'm doing? And also, and what am I achieving in terms of the animal's state of comfort as well, which is important as well. Yes?
This is talking about a domesticated animal or a random animal?
It sounds random at this point in time. It sounds random at this point in time.
You find that there'd be an obligation to go out and save animals when it's not Shabbos, when there's no cost in halacha.
That's true. I don't know if it's going out. Meaning, again, halacha talks about what's in your orbit. In your orbit in this situation...
I'm walking... I just apply to ants, only animals. Does it apply to insects? I'm walking in the forest.
Good, we'll get there in a second. We'll get to that insects. But certainly in my orbit, I don't know if I need to go out into sub-Saharan Africa and go and find the poachers and, tackle them down bodily now because that's happening all the time, right? But I don't know if it's at my immediate requirement, but I certainly need to do everything I can with anything within my space and orbit. The Torah does mandate what's happening around me. That's a very important point, a piece of a little bit yesterday about effective altruism relates to this. It's, there's needs all over the world. There's terrible things happening to humans and to animals everywhere in the world. How far is the Torah requires us to ensure that which is immediately around us is certainly taken care of. That's what seems to be over here. Is you walking along and you see, right? Now, another example is, what about... this is an interesting situation here. The Shulchan Aruch talks about is cases where, let's say, an animal is needed for medical needs. Right? There's a certain medical need that an animal is necessary for as well. So the Shulchan Aruch is talking about serus, which is at least castration. We're not going to focus on that right now. But he does talk about it, the Ramah, at the very end over here, at the very top of page 7, the Ramah says, Kol Davar, in the middle of the line, after the little parentheses, Kol davar hatzarich l'refua or l'shar dvarim leis bei mishum tzar b'isr tzar b'alechayim. If an animal would need to suffer in order for a human being to be healed, then you don't have to be concerned about tzar b'alechayim in that situation. And then he says, uvelachen mutar limroit noitzos me'avozos chayos v'leik alamecha shum tzar b'alechayim. So apparently there was some therapy, and I don't know what this was in those days. They would pluck the feathers off a living duck, and they were, I don't know if what was necessary because of that, whether something they were extracting, or they needed the duck to be slaughtered to feathers. I don't know what the particular therapy was in those days, at least the medical science in those days. But the Ramos says it would be all right. He says, but people don't do that. That's extreme cruelty. If there's another way around, if there's another a way to get the outcome, but the rule is, in general, is that if an animal needs to be, in this case, killed, not for food, but for medicinal properties, that would be allowed. And an extension of that is asked to the Shuas Yaakov, Rav Yaakov ben Yosef Reischer, who was a Rav in Austria in the 1600s, who was asked the following question. Look at the question he was asked in Source 21. He says, he quotes a question from Rav Menachem Dayan Vermeisia. So Rabbi Menachem was a judge in Worms. He nainish alti mi roife mumche. Okay, he quotes this Rav David Weisel. Mi mutar la'asos refuah Dahainu lahamis behemot tamei kugoin kelev ochasul mipnei sofik pikuach nefesh. Am I allowed to kill an animal because of sofik pikuach nefesh? What's the example? Levisha oisur refu adain eno baduk umenusa. It does not have the FDA approval yet, the particular intervention that he's doing. V'yesh livchon oisal yedei shemashke kein lachatzul or lakelev. Right. So before clinical trials and control groups, right, they would bring over Rex, you know, and give it to him and see what happens. And if Rex does not survive, then probably we're not gonna put that on the shelf, right? So, but it's interesting because we're not dealing with like, you know, mass production. We're dealing with a specific case over here, and so.
By the way, we do this.
Absolutely, we do. But on a large extent, the clinical trials always start with animals. In fact, there are laboratories which engineer mice just for experimental medical purposes.
That's the question. It's the budget on Shabbos. You can violate Shabbos.
So you're right. There's pikuach nefesh, but this person was a sofek pikuach nefesh. And what happens over here is that this is not the only way of resolving the issue. This is just testing the issue. So it's a few steps away. Yeah. So cosmetic issues as well. So he actually, the Shvus Yaakov actually is a trendsetter when it comes to this. And he says, it's actually a very long shuv, but I put in the next line where it's the first one is Mipnei Chasidosoi. He says, "Aval vada lahalocha lemaisa nearly borrow kama shikosov da'ein chashash isur dechol de baltash lesotzar balechaim kol sheesh letzorech boy umutol asos afilo lechachila avshesiem remo." And he quotes even the case of the ducks having their feathers taken out. Hainu davka b'meritas noitzal. Right, so she also be dime, margish mo'od hatzar. He says, if you're doing something active like that, that's terrible. That should be avoided. But if there's going to be a clinical trial which is necessary, and the animal may suffer, but it's less, we'll call it direct in terms of the animal. You try to refine the medicine. You're not trying to kill the animal. You're trying to refine the medicine. You're trying to refine it. And if it happens to be that animal does suffer because you have not fine tuned it enough, that still is necessary for the cost of development, at least in the world of medicine as well. And the Sri Dayesh talks about a similar expression today, and he allows even for cosmetic as well, you know, when it comes to this. Another question which was asked is a very famous question that was asked to the Nodi Yehuda, the Rav of Prague, following the Maharal, Rav Cheska Landau. And he was asked, listen to this crazy, crazy question that he was asked, which was in on the top of page 8. He says, "Shor she'elasa ish echad asher zok zikeu akah Hashem benachala rechava." This is like the first time he's got this Jew who suddenly is able to buy an estate. Now, folks, we're in the 1700s. This has never happened. You know, like the Jews did not own estates in Europe up till then. They weren't allowed to. Right, so this is the turning point in the enlightened world. Is this fellow buys a large, estate, v'yesh lo kfarim v'yaros. We're not talking about, you know, acres. We're talking about he owns villages, right? The good old estates, right? Like, you know, fiefdoms, right? So he owns forests. He owns villages. Asher b'yaros tirmosh kol chayas ayar, and there's in the forests exist all types of regular animals living there. Imot lo lech b'atzmo liros bekones shreifa. What does that mean? Can he use his rifle? Latzud Said, Oim Osul Yisrael Lassus Davose. Can Jews hunt? Now, it never came up because just Jews never had the opportunity of even being enfranchised enough to have that opportunity to act like the folks around them who do that all the time. Right? So that was the question. Is this a Jewish type of thing? It's interesting. I'm sure there are many times this happened without the question being answered. But nonetheless, he was asked, this was a from a real estate owner. Okay, so so he goes into a long discussion about whether, technically speaking, for a tzorech, is there a tzar balechaim, is there bal tashkis in this situation as a whole. And then at the end of it, he just says, like, this is like he lets loose. And he says in the last paragraph, and it's a long shiv, I just quoted the pieces of it, he says, "Omnam me'od ani tama al guf hadavar." He's like, I'm really surprised at this question, to be honest. So Lemotzinu Ish Tzayid, Rak Nimrod of Esav. It's like, read what the Torah says about the hunters of the Bible, you know? They're not good people, right? There's no two ways about it. V'ein zeh darko b'nei Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov. That's not the way Jews are supposed to be, the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You shouldn't just go, you know, he's talking about furs and killing animals just for their furs. That's not the way we're supposed to be. It's possible. There's the animals should die, and you can use the things, but to go kill those animals for that, you should be careful about this. As long before Peter, so you're just like, what? You got free time, and you want to act like the regular fellow over there who's got his bugle and his dogs because you want to, you know, you're like, and that's what it means to arrive in society today. It means getting the cars and smoking the same cigars in that society, the society around us. In those days, it meant hunting like them. So like, what's the toilet precisely, right? So like, and so he says that's just not what we're supposed to do now. After he went through all the halachic proofs, and he says it doesn't really add up to technically be tzara b'nechaim because of the tzarech and all the things like and all the limitations, because that's not what we're supposed to be, which means the Nodi Behuda is saying is this is not the Torah wants from us. It doesn't want us to be hunters. It doesn't want us to go around shooting. We once actually had an Airbnb out in deep Pennsylvania, and like, you know, and the cabin was owned by hunters, and like, so every, you know, head on that wall, you know, they had a picture next to it, you know, with their crossbow and their rifle and things like that. They were very into this, you know, and it was quite something. The kids, it was a very memorable family vacation, you know, going to sleep with a moose looking at you, you know. So, but nonetheless, like, that's not really precisely what you're supposed to be doing when it comes to being a Jew as well. And now, just another parameter of this is the Shelis Yavetz, Rav Yaakov Emden, we looked at him beforehand, was asked about killing insects. And so he says in Source 22, second paragraph on the right, he says maybe tzara b'alechaim is limited to animals which are, you know, animals, you know, which are domesticated animals. Like the Torah talks about, like an animal which is bearing a burden. Right, so to be coming to Darshan and Tam and Akra, which becomes a little dangerous here, because, you know, you say, well, you're saying maybe we're limiting it. He says maybe that's what the Torah only wants from us, animals that can express and pain and are big enough. And even dogs and cats, they're part of our lives. He says, like flies and vermin and things like that, really not. Don't know how that squares with the Gemara in Bamitzia. But Bier Zemei, he says that, and he quotes it later on in the next column. He quotes the idea of Rebbe. But in the end of the day, he says that there might be that there's a limitation in terms of the smaller types of animals or insects in our lives as well. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch disagrees with this. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says, "Asim natar letzar kol balechayim." The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is really worthwhile to learn because it's all of our loch in one place. Really, really worthwhile. It's not just the stuff that we know as well. So I'd really highly recommend just going through Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kuf Tzadi Aleph. He talks about Tzar Bali Chaim as an example. And he says, Adrabba Chayiv Lahatzil Kol Bal Chaim Tzar. You see an animal that's in pain, you should go try to save it. He's Avilu Kol Eshel Hefker. Even if it doesn't belong to you, it's not about property or assets. It's about the animal's pain. Avilu Shel Nachri, if it belongs to non-Jew, it doesn't matter. Just save it. Ah. If they are hurting or paining a human being, or they are needed for medicinal other needs for a human being, you are allowed to kill them. You don't worry about the pain in that case. The Torah allowed us to eat animals in the end of the day. He's talking about how the case of the Ramah of the feather gathering. That you everybody is concerned about this because of cruelty as well. It seems to be that it's across the spectrum as well. Rav Moshe Feinstein actually talking on this topic, he has a long shiva, and he talks about insects, and he says, "Aval mikomakom in source 24, im efshar toiv shelo yahargen biyadav mamish." Okay, the mosquitoes bother you. Okay, the flies are and the bees are getting in the way. He says, but in the end of the day, you shouldn't go out there with your fly swat and be smashing them with your hands. There's other ways to do things. You can get fly paper, you can get bee traps, you can get all kinds of other things that are better ways of removing things that are bothering you without being actively wise, is because that's not what Hashem wants from us. Hashem wants us to ensure being a little more careful with things around us. The Chazanish was asked a question. There's a dinim va'anogas b'morana Chazanish. I love these. Sorry, they're like basically little quotations of, you know, he said this on this occasion, like very like out of context topics. But there's many books written like this. One of the one liners that he said that it was quoted in his name. He says, he quotes that one echad mi balabatim shalu al zvuv shem afarper ve'ishu shiyesh ligmor misasai. He says, he was talking about what happens if, you know, the fly is, you know, walking. So, you know, they say, what's the name of a fly without wings? It's a walk, you know, so it's the stage at the end of its life, right? So it's walking around. What should you do? So the Chazon Ish says, kill it, to put it out of its misery. Which means to say that maybe sometimes in certain situations there's mercy killings for this. Do you extend this to every situation? How much of an intervention do you need to make? Obviously, this is just a simple quotation of the Chazon Ish, but here sometimes mercy may indicate being merciful, not playing with it, not torturing, not letting the kids dissect it, doing something to end it as well. So just to do a quick recap over here, is the complexity that Judaism has when it comes to real issues. Does the Torah talk about Tzar Balei Chaim? Well, not explicitly. But it does talk about a lot of mitzvahs which relate to animals, which give us an indication of what the Torah feels about this, what the Torah wants from us. And the Torah also describes a number of circumstances which should give us a little bit of an inkling as to the fact that what the Torah wants from us as well. Why is that? Is that a function of us becoming better human beings, or because there's a natural pain that we're trying to save the animal for? A little bit of a debate between the Rambam and the Ramban. We saw that the limitations exist, where it's not every situation is the same. It's not one size fits all. When it comes to if they're bothering us, if there's a medicinal property, when it comes to just fun or sport, putting something out of its misery, if it's your animal, not your animal, if there's grades of alleviating pain and frustration, these all fall into the topic of the costs and benefits, the risks and the gains from Tzar Balei Chaim. And obviously the situations abound over here, but the sensitivity is clear to us, even if not every situation is immediately obvious as to how to apply it. So, Rabbis, this ends our third shiur, and what we're going to do next week is we're going to look at the role of Rabbinic Judaism in understanding or regulating Ratzon HaTorah, in the way that the Torah wants us to do things, and how that interpretation is an extension of that.